at least in the time that we have, let's begin. So we are up to Gan Eden. So remember, again, we started Gan Eden last class, and we were speaking about what is the job of Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden. What's the job? Two words. La'avdol shamra. What's the meaning of la'avdol shamra? Good, working and guarded. But what does it mean on a deeper level? Right, so remember again, we saw a machlokes. So remember again, last time we did the Eben Ezra and the Targum Yonasan. The Eben Ezra telling us, li'avdal l'shamra, in a literal sense, in a physical sense, li'avdal to work the land, l'shamra to prevent any animals from overrunning the area. The Targum Yonasan, how did he understand li'avdal l'shamra? Avda, what did he refer to? Torah and mitzvos, right? To be an oved ba'torah, to toil in Torah, and ultimately again, l'shamra mitzvos. So I just want to point out something very interesting. From the beginning, even with the Targum Yonasan's idea that La'avda u'lishamra is a spiritual mandate and not a physical mandate. La'avda means to be oved in Torah. L'shamra ultimately means mitzoseh. What do you see from that phrase about the acquisition of spirituality? How does one acquire ruchnius? I'm sorry?
By working
on it. This is incredibly important. Because already from the beginning, you see, the reason why this is interesting is because often, the way people tend to understand this machlokis is like there's two schools of thought. The Eben Ezra school of thought is that you actually have to work. And the Targum Yonasan school of thought is, no, it's not work, it's ruchnius. Almost as if ruchnius is not work. But it's very important to understand that what the Targum Yonasan is saying is, no, ruchnius is work also. Chris Ruchnius is work. A person wants to go ahead and cultivate the sense of Kiddusha. That doesn't just occur no matter what. In order to acquire holiness, and this is true on every level, and by the way, I just want to point out, this is true. People often apply this just to the acquisition of Torah knowledge. Understand, acquiring Torah knowledge is the easiest part of a spiritual identity. Why is it the easiest part of a spiritual identity? I'm sorry? Well, because, again, it's like acquiring any body of knowledge. How do you acquire knowledge? You study it. You study it. I'm saying to acquire knowledge by itself is not the most difficult part of Yiddishkeit. The most difficult part of Yiddishkeit is establishing a sense of dveikus. Right? Isn't that the goal? B'davak dabo. The goal ultimately is to create a dveikus b'Hashem, to create a passionate, loving relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To fall in love with the Ribono Shel Olam. That's the difficult part. Learning Torah by itself is not... Learning Torah is very enjoyable, right? Especially, again, if you're learning it with the right way, person finds the right teacher, the right rabbi, the right... Learning, by definition, is an enjoyable experience because HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed us with intellect. So broadening that intellect is incredibly enjoyable and fulfilling. That's not the difficult part of Ruchnius. The difficult part of Ruchnius is toiling at a relationship, creating a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Devekos, V'Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha. That's the difficult part. I just want to point this out, that even according to, let's say, the Targum Yonasan, who understands La'avda'u L'shamra, is referring La'avda to be an Oved Batorah. What does it mean to be an Oved Batorah? What does it mean?
Toil in Torah.
Toil in Torah. What does that mean?
Apply.
I'm sorry?
Apply.
Good. We're going to come to that in just a bit. What does it mean for Adam HaRishon? Think about this. Remember, God speaking to Adam HaRishon. So does Adam HaRishon does he have a Torah to learn from? I mean, it's not whatever he had. There was clearly some code. So for Adam, what do you think it means to be an Oved Batorah? What does that mean?
Feel connected.
On a most basic level, an Oved Batorah means, at least for Adam HaRishon's purposes, is create a relationship. Create a relationship. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to do with Adam. Remember, again, the first way, right? Remember, this never really gets a chance to take off because of the chait, but you ever wonder to yourself, the first thing, right? The first real thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Adam HaRishon to do, right? So this period of Arivia, that's true, so it's procreation, but the first real thing, like in the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Adam is what? I'm sorry?
Name
the animals. Although, again, even that is not necessarily a mandate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Adam did it. What's the first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates to Adam as an expectation? Don't eat from the eight das tovara. Right? Again, remember, leaving aside period of Arivia, right? I'm leaving that aside right now. Don't eat from the eight das tovara. Does that bother you? All right, maybe it doesn't bother you. Good. It bothers me a little bit. I'll tell you why it bothers me, just a bit. Which is, you would have thought that, like, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating our relationship with Adam, I would have thought, what? How do you start that?
Hello,
right? Nice to meet you, right? Something positive. Something positive. Now, again, leaving aside this period of rivet, but remember, understand what's happening over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating a relationship with Adam, just like a parent creates a relationship with a child. What's the first stage of a parent's relationship with a child? First stage?
Giving.
It's giving, but it's also setting limitations. Remember again, what does a parent say to the child as when the child gets to the corner, right? When a child gets to the corner right by the street, what does the parent say?
Wait for me.
Wait for me. And even as the parent goes ahead and the child gets older, look both ways. The first aspect of a parent-child relationship is, I have to protect you from danger. That's the first step. The primary job as a parent, in the early way, baby is born, baby doesn't do anything, right? Doesn't do anything. There's no communication. You can say, oh, I'm bonding with the baby. Okay, maybe you are, maybe not, I don't know. But Lamaisa, at the end of the day, the job of a parent is protect the child from danger. That's the job. Then the goal of the relationship is that it matures, the relationship matures. And how does the relationship mature? That it's no longer just about saving you from danger, but it's also creating some type of positive dynamic associated with relationship as well, right? Now, think about this. If as I grow up, my only relationship with my parent is that my parent protects me from anything bad happening, which means that every time I get into the car, my parent gives me the car keys, so I get a whole lecture about how everybody else is a crazy driver, you have to be safe, is that's going to happen every single time, and every time I go out, right? So at a certain point in time, I understand it's coming from a good place, but there's not really much depth to that relationship. Saving my child from danger is in a very important part, but the relationship has to progress. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins the relationship by trying to save Adam from danger. Don't eat from the Eitz Das Tov Ra. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts Adam HaRishon in the Gan. And what's Adam's job in the Gan? What's his job? Build out the relationship more. That's what it means. Olios Oved Batorah. Build relationship. And that requires incredible work. Every relationship requires work. This is incredibly important. Everybody wants a blissful marriage. Do you know how you get a blissful marriage? I'm not sure. I'm working on it myself. But I will tell you, there's no question that the avod is every single day you put in effort. Whatever it is. Different marriages require different things. Every single day you work on it. So ultimately, a person wants a meaningful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's an avodah. And that avodah is no less intense than plowing the soil. This is very important, because often we think this is a machlokas about, well, should man really be working or should man not be working? No. Man always works. You always have to work. Adam la'amal yulad, working and working hard, is part and parcel of the dynamic of the human condition. But at the end of the day, the shaila just is, what should man's primary work be with? What is man's primary avodah? So is man's primary avodah the avodah l'shamar, to work the fields? Is that the avodah of man? Or is the avodah of man lios oved batorah? But either way, this is incredibly important, because people think, well, a life of Torah, then it's a more relaxed. Like a person's working, that's one life. A life of Torah, that's more. No. There's no relaxation. Well, there's not supposed to be any. Some relaxation is good. But Adam la'amal yulad is a statement about the human condition. Person has to work hard. So whether it's in Ruchnius or whether it's in Gashmius, a person must apply themselves in totality to a task at hand. Question, yes?
I would think that with obviously the parent and the child, or with any relationship, it would make sense to first create a loving relationship and understand each other and
everything. That sounds great. Why practically doesn't that work? What do you think? You hear the Shaila. Doesn't it make sense in the creation of a relationship to start with love, to start with mutual? So what? It's true. It sounds so correct. But why doesn't it really work that way?
Can I answer the question?
Yes.
That really, it would seem that in a relationship between a parent and a child, that's really how it works, because your mother starts off, when she's carrying a child, she's totally given to the child.
Oh, beautiful. Right, it's very true. There is a selfless love from the beginning. That's true. That's true. But why not carry that over after birth as well? You're thinking about this too much. There's a simple answer to it. What you're describing requires intellect and comprehension on both ends. So you're absolutely right. A relationship should have its effect. That's why in adult relationships, if you start out an adult relationship by saying, you know, you really can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do that, right? A person is involved in a relationship for marriage to someone, and the person tries to tell them, well, you should do this, you can't do this, you can't do that. You run away from that relationship. That could be an emotionally abusive relationship trying to control someone. Adult relationships have to begin with a sense of love, commitment, understanding. But when that capacity is not there, a little baby, a young child, doesn't have that capacity. So what they understand is, children are concrete thinkers. So they're black and white. So I can understand rules. I can do this, I can't do this. Love, empathy, giving, those are much more higher order concepts. So even though conceptually you are correct, but Lamaise, if you look at the way a parent-child relationship really begins, is my job is to protect you. My job is to protect you. And your job, meaning my job as a parent, is to protect the child. And the child, my goal is that you feel protected. That's the goal. As we get older then, Emir Hashem, the relationship progresses. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Adam, you're my child, even though Adam was not born a child. You're my child. My first job is to protect you. Now I'm going to put you in Gan Eden. Now let's build a relationship from there. Yes. Say that once more. The pasuk says, "Adam, Mikala eats agan tochel." Yeah.
And then it says, "But it's the asu can't eat." So doesn't that start off with love? Because it's saying you have everything.
Yes, absolutely. But I'm saying, if you look at right, I understand what you're saying. It starts off first, everything you can eat, and then what you can't eat. I hear it, but I would still think in the first piece of the. Mikala itzagan tochel is not a piece necessarily, it's not a legislation in the relationship. Right? Meaning, I would think that the first command, so to speak, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give to Adam, I would have thought, again, you could definitely disagree, would have been something more positive. I'll give you an example. The first mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to Klal Yisrael is HaChodesh HaZalachem, something positive. It's something positive. Now, again, you could ask, why is that the first mitzvah? But there's something positive and dynamic. I just would have thought that the first mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have given to Adam would have been something positive. Mikol Ha'itz Agan Tochel is not a mitzvah. It's a rishus.
You know, it's not a mitzvah, but it's a
preshi. There's no question. Again, I'm talking on a very specific level. The first mitzvah, quote unquote, that God gave to man was a lo saseh. What's a lo saseh? I just think it's intriguing. It's intriguing. Right? Why does that start off the relationship? So again, and this is just my opinion, so you could definitely disagree with this, but my feeling with it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Adam, right now, you are biologically a man, but you're a child. My job is to protect you. So I'm telling you, don't eat this. Don't go next to the fire. Don't cross the street without looking both ways. My job is to protect you. Your job now is I'm going to put you in the gun. Now your job is la'avdo, la'avod batorah, to cultivate a more sophisticated, higher level, mutually appreciating relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But again, it's just a thought, certainly not just my opinion. I'm sorry?
Isn't there like a medrash that Hashem created Adam and brought him like all the trees and said like all this I created for you?
Absolutely. I'm trying to get you focused over here on legislation. First mitzvah. What's the first mitzvah? Right? It's beautiful. Hashem Baruch Hu loves Adam, Kishulchan Orech, everything is beautiful, everything is wonderful. What is the first obligation that Adam has vis-a-vis God? It's something you can't do, which again, is just a strange way to set the table. Let me say it differently. It appears to me to be a strange way to set the table, especially again, you see, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Klal Yisrael the first mitzvah, it's dafka something positive. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have done something else. There's no shortage of lo saseis, but he chooses to begin the relationship with an asay. So again, I just think it's something to keep note of, that he starts with a lo saseh, because again, Adam is a man, but yet the relationship is still in its embryonic child state. And the embryonic child state, my job as a parent, protect my child. Then hopefully the relationship progresses as we both get older and mature. So Targum Yonasan highlighting this idea that this is not a choice between work and no work. Everything is work. Everything is work. This is incredibly, incredibly important. And this is also important as well, that Emirat Hashem, as you enter into Shiduchim, I'm sure some of you are already in Shiduchim, and if you are looking for a boy who is in learning, one of the most important things sometimes to look for is, what does a young man do bein hasdarim? What does a person do during bein hasdarim? Or for that matter, again, I often say, even the better litmus test, I spoke about this in the difference here, is, you know, for which chasanas do they leave yeshiva? It's always a good one, right? Because at the end of the day, there's no shortage of chasanas to go to. You go to a chasana in Lakewood, that's a half a day. That's a half a day. That's gone. That's missed. Chavrus is missed. So what do you miss for? What don't you miss for? Who do you go for? Who don't you go for? It's an incredibly important yisod, because sitting and learning is not a pitur from working. Sitting and learning is an avoda that is as beautiful and in certain respects even more important for Kiyum HaShalom than anything. But it has to be taken with the same level of seriousness. If it's approached ultimately again as, I don't work, I learn, there's a chisaron in that. No, you work. If you're in the base medrash and you're not toiling as much as a doctor or a lawyer, or you're not putting in the same amount of commitment, or you're not thinking twice about taking off the same time as anyone else in any other profession, that's a chisaron in my avoda then. The work is not as intense as it needs to be. A very important yisod. Let's go on. Chizkuni number 8. Chizkuni writes, so he writes, Chizkuni says, I'm just showing you just the Mefarshim vacillate in this, and they go back and forth in this entire Yisod. He says, so the Chizkuni says again, La'avda means to water. To water, which is very interesting. So we're not getting into it now, but I do want to point out to you how it's fascinating that avda is lahashgosa, right? Even though, again, avda could have been, you could translate that word as so many different things, but it's translated ultimately as watering. We'll see that there's a beautiful metaphorical understanding. I mean, obviously, the pashup shah, why do they translate avda as lahashgosa? Why do they translate it that way? I'm sorry? Physical act of it, good wise. I'm saying, why doesn't it say plowing or something, or weeding? Right, because remember, Adam is entering into a world in a finished state. So like the only thing that has to be done right now is watering. That's the Pashup shot. We're going to see that there's a beautiful metaphorical understanding of the concept of watering as well in the Emirat Hashem in a little bit. So he writes on, he says, La'avda means to water it. L'shamra, shelo yirmesu, I'm number 8. Shelo yirmesu, ragli behima v'chaya, shadayin lo haya sham lahat cher v'akruvim. Furthermore, again, l'shamra means to protect the gan from animals. Now, it's interesting, the Chizkuni points out, because right now, there's no barrier to Gan Eden, right? There's no wall, there's no protective fence, there's no malach with a fiery sword, which happens later on. So the Gan is totally open and exposed. As such, it is up to man, it is up to Adam to literally protect the Gan from any encroaching animals. He goes on, Davar acher, la'avda ashim sheshes yamim tavod. Ula Shamra, Ashim Shamra Yom Shabbos, Vichin Hula Avda B'Sheshes Me'amasa, Ula Shamra Yom Shabbos She'in Bo'avoda. So the Chizkuni adds in something else over here, which is very interesting. He understands that maybe La Avda Ula Shamra is also a reference to what? 6 days of work and Shabbos. That even Adam Arishon has a Shabbos. As a Shabbos, that even La Avda ultimately means, yes, work during the 6 days, but l'shamra, make sure again that you have a Shabbos as well. Now again, what's interesting about this is as follows. What do you think the second approach of the Chizkuni is adding on to the first one? So the first one, he says, la'avda means to water it, l'shamra, keep out the animals. Second approach, la'avda, 6 days, l'shamra, Shabbos. What's the connection between the two approaches? What would you say? So physical and spiritual, excellent, good. And if we merge them even a bit more, the Chizkuni is starting to lead us in a particular direction. And that's a particular direction that tells us that the physical and the spiritual are not an either or. And the physical and the spiritual are not mutually exclusive routes. But rather the ultimate goal in life is to somehow be able to synthesize the two, right? Isn't that the ultimate Shabbos Sheshes Yomim Tase Melachtecha idea? It's not the pshat that there are 6 days of work and that there's a Shabbos, but that somehow Shabbos is related to the 6 days. The 6 days are related to Shabbos. So again, we'll see this come out a little bit more. If we look at Rav Chaim Paltiel, take a look at number 9. So Rav Chaim Paltiel in his parish on Chumash writes as follows: Li Avdal L'Shamra, he says, Vim Tomar V'Harig Gan. Loshon Zocherhu, V'kaseh ala lashon nekeva. So Chai Palti raises a very interesting question. Gan is masculine. Li'avda u'lishamra is? Nekeva, feminine. So that's the pshat. Right? Why would you have feminine modifiers ultimately again for a masculine noun? So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Rechai Balti Yosef Yishlomar, Demusav Adila'el, Vihi Ha'adam L'Nefesh Chaya, Vachi Kamar. Here we go. So this is incredible. Rechai Balti Yosef says, everybody's reading the Pasuk wrong. Li Avda U'lishamra is not going on the gan. This is incredible. See, up until now, everyone's saying Avda U'lishamra goes on the gan. And what's the Shaila? The Shaila is what's the definition of the Avda, what's the definition of the Shamra? So says Rechai Balti Yosef, no. La Avda U'lishamra is going on Adam. Vahiya Adam L'Nefesh Chaya. Adam was a living soul. Kadosh Baruch Hu puts him in the gan. Why does Kadosh Baruch Hu put him in the gan? Li avda ulishamra, but not la avda ulishamra the gan, but rather la avda ulishamra his neshama, his nefesh, his persona. He goes on. He says, "Yishomar the musav adaleva yadon afshkai." Second line, number 9. V'alchi kamar. This is what the pasuk means to say. Vayanichiu began Eden li avda ulishamra hanefesh. Wow. Kadosh Baruch Hu puts Adam Arishon into Gan Eden. Why? La'avdo l'shama, so that he could work and that he could safeguard his nefesh. V'zeu shakasav mikol eitz hagan achol tochel ato mechuyav la'avo l'nishmascha u'lahachil ba u'mipri hadas tishmerena. So Chaim Paltiel says so beautifully that what's the meaning of the pasuk? Kadosh Baruch Hu creates Adam l'nefesh chaya, nefesh chaya meaning a beautiful, living, vibrant soul. He puts him in Gan Eden. And why does he put him in Gan Eden? Li'avda u'lishamra. The avoda of Gan Eden is to allow Adam to work on and to guard his soul. To work on, ultimately again, ata mechuyav la'avo l'nishmascha u'lahachil ba, and to feed it, but to not just feed it from physical food, to feed it spiritual food as well. U'lishamra means, but avoid the eitz das tovara. Avoid the forbidden fruit. So this is incredible, because what we begin to see from Rechaim Paltiel, I think we could kind of merge these all together, that Rechaim Paltiel says that what was the core avoda, in such a different way of looking at things, the core avoda of Gan Eden was not for Adam to work the gan. Because if it's about working the land, you could work the land anywhere. The core avoda of Gan Eden was to allow Adam to work on himself. The avda u'lishamra ultimately again is in the feminine, because ultimately again it's going back on the word nefesh. And it's referring back to the soul of Adam Harishon. So this is really incredible. So let's analyze this a little bit. So if we go with Rechaim Paltiel's approach, that la avda u'lishamra is not about the gan, but ultimately again really about the cultivation and guarding of man's soul. So how did Adam Arishon, how was he supposed to accomplish that in the Gan? So using the mafarshim we've seen until now, the Eben Ezra, the Targum Yonason, the Chizkuni. I'm going to tell you the definition of Rechaim Paltiel. La'av d'l'sham means Adam was being put in the Gan to go ahead and guard, or to work, to cultivate, and to guard his soul. How does he accomplish that in Gan Eden? So part of it, yes. So leaving aside Rechaim Paltiel's definition, right. So according to Rechaim Paltiel, from not eating the Eitz Das Tovara. But based on what you saw from the Eben Ezra, the Targum Yonason, and the Chizkuni, how does Adam Harishon cultivate and guard his soul in Gan Eden? What would you say? Good. So take out the word or and just substitute it with the word and. Right? What comes out, according to Rav Chaim Paltiel, if we bring this all together, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to teach Adam Arishon an incredibly dramatic lesson. The goal in life is to create a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The challenge is that sometimes we bifurcate this responsibility. And we say, I cultivate a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in these areas of life, but these areas are not really about relationship with Hashem. Right, so when do I cultivate relationship with Hashem? When I daven, when I learn, when I'm working on myself, that's when I cultivate relationship with Hashem Baruch Hu. But when I go to work, when I go to the office, when I'm doing other things that are quote unquote chol, no. That's not really about relationship with Hashem Baruch Hu. That's about my parnasa, that's about my career, that's about my worldly pursuits. And here Adam Rishon is placed in the gan. And what does he do in the Gan? And this is what I want to point out to you is, in reality, we learned these mafarshim as arguing with each other, but the truth is they are not mutually exclusive in any way. The point of the Gan, was to allow Adam HaRishon to understand that you could find the Ribono Shel Olam in anything and everything. You could find HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately, again, it being Oveid BaTorah and being Shomer Mitzvos. And you could also find HaKadosh Baruch Hu in watering the field and keeping the Gan pure and pristine. Because at the end of the day, when you look at anything deeply enough, if you look with the right set of eyes, if you have the right prescription, life-right prescription, you could see the magnificence of the Ribono Shel Olam in anything and everything. You just have to be looking at life through the right lens. And Rabbi Soloveitchik, had a number of, he gave a number of shiurim on tefillah. And they were put together in a book on tefillah, on prayer. I forgot the title of the book. But there Rabbi Soloveitchik speaks about it. It's quite a fascinating essay about the different mediums through which we experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Different mediums, right? So there is the volitional medium. We experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu through activity, through mitzvos. There's, of course, the intellectual medium where I access HaKadosh Baruch Hu through learning, through understanding. Remember, Rabbi Soloveitchik, who was part of the Brisker dynasty in Brisk, intellect is everything. Rabbi Soloveitchik, in a biography about Rabbi Soloveitchik, he writes that when he said goodbye to his father, Rabbi Soloveitchik's father was Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said goodbye to his father. Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik was coming to New York to be a Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. This was before the days of Yeshiva University. There was the Yeshiva. So Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik was coming, and the Rabbi Soloveitchik was staying in, I guess, in Warsaw. He was staying in Warsaw. And he said, when he said goodbye to his father, they shook hands. Now, you have to understand something. When he was taking leave of his father, they didn't know if they were ever going to see each other again. This was a boat ride across the Atlantic. This was not like a 5-hour plane. They never said they were going to know each other again. So they said, we shook hands. And then Rabbi Soloveitchik said, and my father never told me he loved me. But he said, I knew that my father loved me immensely. So the Rav knew his father loved him, but his father never articulated it. Why? Because in Brisk, you don't talk about emotion. Because in Brisk, emotion is weakness. Emotion is weakness. Intellect is king. Which is really quite a fascinating approach. Actually, interesting that we'll go on with this. Rabbi Soloveitchik says, because if you read any of the Rav's Torah, the Rav had a lot of emotion in his Torah. So he attributed his emotion, his intellect, he said, came from my father. He attributed his emotion to two different places. One was his mother, right? His mother was not from the Brisker dynasty. His mother was a Feinstein, Ramosha's family. That's why the Rav was a cousin to Rav Moshe. So he attributed it to his mother. And interestingly enough, when he was a young boy, his father was a Rav in the town of Chaslovich. Chaslovich was in White Russia. And interestingly, Chaslovich was a Chabad town. But for some reason, I don't know how Rav Moshe Soloveitchik got the job, but somehow Rav Moshe Soloveitchik got the job in Chaslovich. So he enrolled little Rav Yashaber, the Rav when he was a little boy in the Cheder, and the Melamed was supposed to be teaching the boys Gemara. So what happened? But he didn't teach them Gemara, so he taught them Tanya. So every day, can you imagine, they show up at the Cheder, they're supposed to be learning Baba Metzia. They open Tanya. But what would they do? Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, as the Rav of the town, would kind of make like surprise visits to the Cheder. So the Melamed used to tell one of the boys to stand guard at the door. And when they would see Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik coming, they would close their Tanyas, they'd open up Gemaras, and they would just start yelling. Because, you know, if you talk really loud, it sounds like you're learning. So they would just start yelling. So Rabbi Soloveitchik writes, he said, this went on for a little while until one time his father took him to his grandfather. So Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik took his son, little Yashaber, to his grandfather, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, for a faher. So Zayda asked his grandson, what are you learning? The grandson said, oh, Baba Metzia. He opened up Baba Metzia, and the little boy didn't know a word, but he was able to say the first 7 prakim of Tanya by heart. So that's at that point in time, the gig was up. Rabbi Soloveitchik says those years, what he got from that Chabad Melamed, right? The heart and the emotion that he got. So the Rav was one of these unique individuals who was this synthesis on one hand of the intellect of Brisk, but the emotion of Chassidus in any event. So How is I bringing this up? What was this about?
We experience Hashem through different ways.
Thank you. We experience Hashem through different ways. Right. So Rabbi Soloveitchik writes, thank you. So Rabbi Soloveitchik writes that one of the mediums, thank you, that we experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu through is, he calls this the experiential medium. Experiential medium. So what's the experiential medium? So he quotes, Rabbi Soloveitchik quotes William James. And William James writes that when standing under the starry night, one, I forgot the exact quotation, but essentially, again, one could feel, it goes like this. When standing under the starlit sky, one could feel the breath of infinity against the nape of his neck. In English, what that means is, when you see, when you stand outside and you look at the stars in the sky, I don't mean like if you go to a place where there's no artificial light, and you literally see all the stars in the sky. I'll tell you an incredible story in just a moment about this. An incredible sky filled with stars. That's a spiritual experience. That is a spiritual experience that ultimately a person undergoes. There are multiple mediums. So Rechaim Baltil is saying over here something incredible, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Adam, I'm going to put you in the Gan. And the point of the Gan is La'avdo L'shamra, to cultivate your own spirituality, to work on your nefesh, to work on your neshama. And how do you do that? Through everything. I want you to do it through watering the ground. I want you to do it by keeping the animals out. I want you to do it through learning, whatever Adam was learning. I want you to do it through mitzvahs, whatever mitzvahs Adam had. Because in life, there's no such thing as, well, this is something holy, this is something unholy. This is something that is good for my avodas. This is not everything in life. Both avodas hagashmi and avodas haruchni can be used to create a bridge between ourselves and the Ribono Shel Olam. And the entire point of Gan Eden was to show Adam HaRishon, and by extension, all of humanity, that lesson. Right? Isn't the greatest struggle we go through in life is this Hamabdul Bin Kodesh L'chol. Right? That we assume, ultimately, again, that there are things that are, this is for the Avodas Hashem, and this is not Avodas Hashem. This is holy, this is not holy. When in reality, there's holiness to be found in everything. Just for some things, the holiness is clear and obvious and apparent. And in other things, it's a bit more obscured and hidden. But the avoda of man is to be able to use everything in life as a form of avoda Hashem. And where does this come from? This comes from Adam and Rishon. They're not arguing. They're talking about different forms of avoda, different forms of shmira. But the goal of Adam and Rishon in Gan Eden was to be able to utilize everything for avodas Hashem. Of course, this is the way life was supposed to be. But life in Gan Eden was very short-lived. Very short-lived. You know, not as short as we think. You know, when you read the Chumash, you assume Adam and Rishon was born. He goes into Gan Eden an hour later. We know Cain and Hevel were born in Gan Eden. So obviously, there was a lot more. There was time that they spent in Gan Eden before they were exiled. But the point is, as far as the human condition is concerned, very relatively small amount of time. So what was started as a beautiful experiment to allow Adam to create a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all different avenues, unfortunately, again, is short-lived, which then leads us to a very simple question. Well, not such a simple question. So what happens now? What happens now in the absence of Gan Eden? Right, so, you ever think about this? Now, we were exiled from Gan Eden. Whatever, I don't know, it's not exactly clear, like, what happens. When Mashiach comes, is there a Gan Eden again? Or is Gan Eden just going to kind of remain as we understand it for the most part now, which is this next world experience? What happens now that there is no Gan Eden? So it's an interesting question to ponder. So now there's no more Gan Eden. We were exiled from Gan Eden. So what is my avoda in the post-Gan Eden world? Which is obviously a very broad question. But I understand, you see, Adam HaRishon, you know, what's the greatest challenge in life? The greatest challenge? I think we mentioned this last year, last class. Greatest challenge?
Remaining inspired,
absolutely. Even more fundamental.
Getting inspired.
Getting inspired, good. I mentioned this last time. I'm sorry? Right. What does the Kashbah want from me? What am I doing here? Is this not the most overwhelming and important question of life? Meaning, because I want to say something very important. You know, a person could lead a very meaningful life, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they fulfilled their tachlis. It's very important. It's the same way, You could have a very busy day, but it doesn't mean that what? It doesn't mean you're productive. This happens all the time. It's so easy to get busy with stuff, right? You can be busy all the time. The other day, I'm totally busy working from morning till night. Did I accomplish what I wanted to accomplish? No. What was I productive? Did I utilize? So this yesod that, like, what am I supposed to do? What is my job? What is my avoda in this world? And that's a really scary question, because what happens if I'm wrong? Now, the good news is, what happens if you're wrong about your avoda in this world? What happens after 120, you find out that you didn't do what you were supposed to do? So maybe there's a concept of Gilgal, right? I don't know about such things, right? Good, that you said that very quickly. Good, come back again. Good. What else? What's the good news? What? You tried. The great news is that Klal Yisrael, in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all that Ribono Shel Olam really wants from us, it's not that I tried. So I led a meaningful, purposeful life, and I tried my best. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, great, Shkoyach, that's fantastic. And I would like to think, although obviously I don't know, I like to think you even get the same Olam Haba. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to deprive you of an Olam Haba because you didn't exactly fulfill the exact... As long as you lived a good life, you tried your hardest. But there is this strong possibility that after 120, you reach a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Kaddish Baruch Hu says, great job. You lived a really beautiful life. But let me show you what you could have done. Yes?
How could it be a person tries their hardest and doesn't
overcome it? A person tries their hardest and?
How could it be a person tries their hardest and doesn't overcome it?
Because again, what if I don't make the right decisions? I'm going to try my hardest to be an exceptional Rav. What if that wasn't my tachlis? What if my tachlis was to be a second grade teacher and to inspire children and to go out and lead? It's possible that I just, you know, maybe I did a good job. I did good things, but who says that I necessarily made the right choices? Meaning, I have a tachlis. I have something I could have. Remember, let me see it like this. I don't know if they had it when you were younger. I know when I was younger, they had these books, Choose Your Own Adventure. Yeah, right. You get to read the story. You want to go right, turn to page 32. You want to go left, turn to page 26. I thought, what an incredible metaphor for life. Now, they're both good endings. I think usually they're both good endings, right? Hopefully they're both good endings. Right? They're both good endings. They're just different endings. So a person could go out and make decisions in life that are good decisions. But I also had opportunity for other decisions. And had I made those other decisions, that's what I'm saying. It's not really something to get all anxious about, because the good news is that klapi shmayu, the Kosh Baruch Hu, all Moshom looks for is effort. Did you try? Did you work? Did you toil? Sometimes people make the right decisions, the wrong decisions. But yes, there's a very strong possibility that a person could live life and not fully actualize their potential or not do what they really could have done in life. It is a real possibility. The good news is, I don't believe it impacts your Olam Haba. I think your Olam Haba is fundamentally rooted in how much effort you are really willing to take. So, the incredible thing that, we'll have to stop with this, but the incredible thing that Adam HaRishon had, is think about this just a moment. It wasn't just Adam HaRishon. Think about great people throughout our history. Almost all of our great people had one thing in common, which is, think about this just a moment. From Avram, Yitzchak was a little bit different. The Avos were, after Avram, the Avos were a little bit different. But think about this. Avram, Moshe, David. So they built themselves up from nothing. Excellent. What else? They all had a hard life. That is the hallmark for almost all greatness. What else?
Shepherds.
Shepherding is a big motif. A big motif in leaders, right? That's the way you get your practice. Start with the flock. What else? Kept trying, never gave up. Absolutely. What about how they found their way into the service of God? How did it happen almost for all of them? Not by choice. They were drafted. So Avram, there's a Zohar that says that he turned to look, he turned to listen to the voice. But I'm saying, Pshuto Shel Mikra. Ve'yomer Shem al Avram, Lech Lecha. True, he could have ignored it. He could have ignored it. It's true. Moshe Rabbeinu makes the quote-unquote mistake of what? Going to look at the snap, right? I guarantee there were days Moshe Rabbeinu said, I should just kept walking. But he goes ahead and he turns to see this now. Once he turns to see, that's it. He's drafted. David HaMelech, even before the Shaul, drafted. David HaMelech, the king of the messianic line, of eternal monarchy. How did he get his job? Against his will. He didn't ask for it. He didn't ask for it. Shaul's nechba ben akilim. No, they didn't want it. But interestingly enough, there's something, and same thing with Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon is given a destiny, right? I'm putting you in the guy, here's your job. Sometimes, great people, the advantage they have is they're given their script, which is incredible, really incredible. In fact, when does Moshe Rabbeinu get in trouble? When does he get in trouble? But he doesn't follow the script. Moshe Rabbeinu's life was very carefully choreographed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu told him, do this. The two exceptions to the rule is when he argued against HaKadosh Baruch Hu after Chet HaEgel and Chet HaMeraglim. But otherwise, it's scripted. That's why it's only when Moshe Rabbeinu goes off the script, even David HaMelech, even Shaul. Shaul's mistake was when he goes off the script. So if you look, the beauty of what we're describing in Gan Eden is that life was scripted. Who amongst us doesn't yearn for a scripted life? Imagine if you're born with a post-it note on your forehead, right? And the post-it note says everything you're supposed to accomplish in this world. How much, life may still be difficult, there are still challenges, but how much greater would it be if I had clarity about what I was supposed to do? And the truth is, Gan Eden was that clarity. So the question, of course, becomes, in the post-Gan Eden world, Adam is told, given clarity, la'avda u'lashamra. Moshe is given clarity. Avram's given clarity. Again, obviously, even in lives of clarity, there's some ambiguity. But Lamaisa, there's a clear mission. That was Gan Eden, clear mission. So, of course, the Shaila becomes, in the post-Gan Eden world, where we don't have that clarity, or we don't have Gan Eden to give us clarity, how do we find Gan Eden-like clarity when you don't have the ability to access Gan Eden? All right, so we'll have to stop over here for today. And then Amir Hashem, it looks like we will spend one more class on Gan Eden on Monday, and then Amir Hashem go back to the Eretz.